ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। Okay, so reading from Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, Chapter 6, Liberation of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. So on page 124. Pratigya. The factual meaning of the aphorisms of the Vedanta Sutra is as clear as sunshine. The Mayavadi philosophers simply try to cover the sunshine with the clouds of interpretations imagined by Shankaracharya and his followers. Adhyaya Prakashika. A summary of the six chapters given by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his Amrita Prabaha Vasya as follows. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu entered the temple of Jagannath, he immediately fainted. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya then took him to his home. Meanwhile, Gopinath Acharya, the brother-in-law of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, met Mukunda Dutta and talked to him about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's acceptance of sannyas and his journey to Jagannath Puri. After hearing about Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's fainting and his being carried to the house of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, people crowded there to see the Lord. Srila Nityananda Prabhu and other devotees then visited the Jagannath temple. And when they came back to the house of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu returned to external consciousness. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya received everyone and distributed Mahaprasad with great care. The Bhattacharya then became acquainted with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and arranged accommodations at his aunt's house. His brother-in-law, Gopinath Acharya, established that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was Krishna himself. The Sarvabhauma and his many disciples could not accept this. However, Gopinath Acharya convinced Sarvabhauma that no one can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead without being favored by him. He proved by Shastra quotations from revealed scriptures that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was Krishna himself in person. Still, Sarvabhauma did not take these statements very seriously. Hearing all these arguments, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told his devotees that Sarvabhauma was a spiritual master, and that whatever he said out of affection was for everyone's benefit. Because originally he was supposed to be Lord Chaitanya's spiritual master, but because he got deviated by the Mayavad philosophy, he ended up going to Puri, and so he didn't study under him in Gurukul. When Sarvabhauma met Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he asked him to hear Vedanta philosophy from him. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted this proposal, and for 7 days he continually heard Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya explain the Vedanta Sutra. However, the Lord remained very silent, because otherwise you might, okay, yes, not your hair, do something. He just remained silent, as if, you know, not saying anything, responding. Because of his silence, the Bhattacharya asked him whether he was understanding the Vedanta philosophy. And the Lord replied, "Sir, I can understand Vedanta philosophy very clearly, but I cannot understand your explanations." End quote. There was then a discussion between the Bhattacharya and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu concerning the authority of the Vedic scriptures, specifically the Upanishads and Vedanta Sutra. The Bhattacharya was an impersonalist, but Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu proved that the absolute truth is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He proved that the conceptions of the Mayavad philosophers concerning the impersonal absolute truth are incorrect. The absolute truth is personal, nor without power. The greatest mistake made by the Mayavadi philosophers is in conceiving the absolute truth to be impersonal and without energy. In all the Vedas, the unlimited energies of the absolute truth have been accepted. It is also accepted that the absolute truth has its transcendental, blissful, eternal form. According to the Vedas, the Lord and the living entity are equal in quality, but different qualitatively, quantitatively. The real philosophy of the absolute truth states that the Lord and his creations are inconceivably and simultaneously one and different. So it's not just one and different, but it's simultaneous, it's inconceivably. It means it can't be understood by mundane logic. It has to be appreciated because the Lord, he himself reveals. That's how one knows. Otherwise, then one can't know. The conclusion is that the Mayavadi philosophers are actually atheists. There was much discussion on this issue between Sarvabhauma and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But despite all his endeavors, the Bhattacharya was defeated in the end, right? Because he was considered the greatest scholar in India at the time. So that means if it came to logic and argument, he would be the best. But he was defeated by Lord Chaitanya. And so then it all worked out like that. At the request of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then explained the Atmarama verse of Srimad Bhagavatam in 18 different ways. When the Bhattacharya came to his senses, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu disclosed his real identity. The Bhattacharya then recited 100 verses in praise of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and offered his obeisances. After this, Gopinathacharya and all the others, having seen the wonderful potencies of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, became very joyful, because Gopinathacharya is a devotee. And then his brother-in-law, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, then is not. And so they've probably been arguing for however long they've been related. And so now Lord Chaitanya, then in this city, then he's convinced them of the proper understanding, the Vaishnava understanding. So Gopinathacharya and the others must be very, very happy now. One morning after this incident, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu received some Mahaprasad from Jagannath and offered it to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Without caring for formality, the Bhattacharya immediately partook of the Mahaprasadam. On another day, when the Bhattacharya asked Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu the best way to worship and meditate, the Lord advised him to chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. On another day, the Bhattacharya wanted to challenge, to change the reading of Tat Te Nukampam, Hare Krishna. I guess it's very sweet Chaitanya Charitamrita, right? 10.14.8. This verse, because he did not like the word Muktipada. He wanted to substantiate the word Bhaktipada. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu advised Sarvabhauma not to change the reading of Srimad Bhagavatam, because Muktipad indicated the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna. Having become a pure devotee, the Bhattacharya said, because the meaning is hazy, I still prefer Bhaktipad. At this, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the other inhabitants of Jagannath Puri became very pleased. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya thus became a pure Vaishnava, and the other learned scholars there followed him. There was Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, one of the biggest branches of the tree of the Lord, and his sister's husband, Sri Gopinathacharya, Adi Lila 10.1.30, Srila Prabhupada. The original name of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was Vasudeva Bhattacharya. His place of birth, which is known as Vidyanagar, is about 2.5 miles away from the Navadvip railway station, or Chapahati railway station. His father was a very much celebrated man of the name Maheshvara Visharada. It is said that Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was the greatest logician of his time in India. In Mithila, in Bihar, he became a student of the great professor named Pakshadhara Mishra, who did not allow any student to note down his explanations of logic. But either he would explain them, you either caught them or you didn't, because otherwise they write them down, they could study, and this way they could gain. So, you know, it's false ego, but it happened. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was so talented, however, that he learned the explanations by heart. And when he later returned to Navadvip, he established a school for study of logic, thus diminishing the importance of Mithila. That's why they were careful about that. Students from various parts of India still come to Navadvip to study logic. According to some authoritative opinions, the celebrated logician Raghunath Shiromani was also a student of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. In effect, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya became the leader of all students of logic. Although he was a grihastha, householder, he even taught many sannyasis in the knowledge of logic. Right? That's why he would be very confident to teach Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because he was a young sannyasi in that. He started a school at Jagannath Puri for the study of Vedanta philosophy, of which he was a great scholar. When Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya met Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he advised the Lord to learn Vedanta philosophy from him. But later he became a student of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to understand the real meaning. The real meaning of Vedanta. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was so fortunate as to see the six-armed form of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, known as Sarabhuj. The Sarabhuj deity is still situated at one end of the Jagannath temple. Daily Sankirtana performances take place in this part of the temple. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya wrote a book of 100 verses named Chaitanya Shataka or Shushloka Shataka. Two other verses he wrote, beginning with the words Vairagya Vidya Nija Bhakti Yoga, Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila 6254, and Kalan Nastam Bhakti Yoga Nija Ya, are very famous among Gaudiya Vaishnavas. The Gaura Ganadesh Deepika 119 states that Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was an incarnation of Brihaspati, the learned scholar from the celestial planets. Gopinath Acharya, who belonged to a respectable Brahmin family, was also an inhabitant of Navadvipa and a constant companion of the Lord. He was the husband of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's sister. In the Gaura Ganadesh Deepika 178, it is described that he was formerly the gopi named Ratnavali. According to the opinion of others, he is an incarnation of Brahma. So this would be Gopinath Acharya is Brahma, or that would mean the Bhattacharya. No? You have to push button.
I understood that it's Gopinath Acharya Maharaj.
That's what I would think. The one's Brihaspati and the other one is what, Halidhar had something to say? No?
No, Maharaj.
So you have these things because even they're doing, there's a certain aspect of the personality or a certain aspect. These ants come back very quick. It's very funny, wherever an ant is, if you take it and blow them from there across the room, they come back exactly to that spot, no matter which direction you blow them. How, I don't know, but they just come right back there. You'd think they'd be smarter, but they don't. They don't. They come right back. Okay, so they're both in that part of Navadvipa, and so then Gopinath Acharya is marrying the sister of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. So then, you know, great scholars and everything like that. So we see us in that place in Vidyanagar. Lord Chaitanya was going to go to school in Vidyanagar, and so it was supposed to be in. He's already back. This guy is really fast. He was supposed to learn from Bhattacharya, but he had gone to Puri, so that's why he learned from Vidyavachaspati. Shloka Anusharanam, summary of verses 1 to 48. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya receives Lord Chaitanya in Jagannath Puri. 49 to 117, the Bhattacharya's plan to make Lord Chaitanya a first-class sannyasi. 118 to 125, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya explains the Vedanta Sutra. 126 to 83, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's critique of Shankaracharya's Sharirika Bhashya. 184 to 199, the Atmarama verse. 200 to 258, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya becomes a pure Vaishnava. 259 to 286, the discussion on Srimad Bhagavatam, verse 10, 14, 8. Yeah, we notice here's the few more verses in the Chaitanya Charitamrita per chapter than in the Bhagavatam or Gita, right? So, verses 1 to 48, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya receives Lord Chaitanya in Jagannath Puri. 2, 6, 1 through 8. I offer my respectful obeisances unto Lord Gaurachandra, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who converted the hard-hearted Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, the reservoir of all bad logic, into a great devotee. So logic that's not based on, what is the problem with logic? See, because one could say is, no, but you're analyzing things and everything very nicely. And so you're using the intelligence. Intelligence is good, right? Because the intelligence is the more subtle element than the mind. The mind, then you tend to get sentimental and emotional. And here, then with the intelligence, that's higher. So, and your logic's scientific. So one would think this is a great thing. Difficulty comes up is that the potency that you understand words, like the words have a potency. And so it's not just there on their own. It's Krishna's potency that those words have are work the way they do. And so that's what's not understood in the process of logic. That the word has its inherent meaning, and how it's being used, it has its inherent meaning. And so how the words are put together, what the person is trying to express, and you know how nicely they follow the rules of exposition, then they're able to very exactly state what they want to say. So this meaning to the words, that's called the Abhida Shakti. And that means is what it directly means. If it says, 10 elephants, it means 10 elephants. It doesn't mean 9, it doesn't mean 11. It doesn't mean that there's no elephants and actually we're talking about something else, right? Now, if you're saying, you talk about the elephant in the room and everyone looks around, there's no elephant in the room, then you understand now it's using the Lakshana Shakti. Lakshana means the indirect meaning. But the point is one works or the other works. They don't both work. So if you say, if people are there in the room and everyone's being very careful about something because of some particular thing that's been said, and someone mentions about the elephant in the room, then you know that they're using Lakshana Shakti, because one, no elephant would even fit in the room that they're in, let alone with them and the furniture there. So it can't mean, it can't be direct. It has to be that you're giving some kind of poetic meaning. And so then you understand, the elephant in the room from the phrase, meaning the obvious thing that should be discussed, but no one wants to discuss it because it's just too, big, like that. But if we're, outside and we say the elephants, then their elephants are there. It's the Abhida Shakti. So that's the point, is one or the other is working. But the Mayavadis, even though the Abhida Shakti is working very perfectly, they apply the Lakshana Shakti and come up with some other idea, right? And so they misapply. That's why it says bad logic. Like the bad logic, like you say, the dog, bad dog, yeah. So this bad logic is because they're misapplying. It's not that mechanically they're using logic wrong. The mechanics of the logic are fine, but they're applying logic in an area where it does not deserve to be applied. It's not, there's nothing wrong. So that's why we say bad logic. People say, how can you say in this? Because it's the direct meaning is there. It actually means this. So why are you using indirect? Because from the indirect, then you can speculate and use your logic. You say this and so on. That's nice. But you could also look at it like and give some other way and that. And so you can just go on and on and on about it. Like we were saying, is that one devotee was sitting with some Sri Vaishnava Brahmins in South, where they were doing an installation or something. And, there was time to pass. They were just sitting there and, they were friends and nothing to do. So then somebody chants the famous shloka to Ganesh. And then he gives a meaning, but he adjusts it, right? So instead of using the direct meaning that is Ganesh, right? Then he starts to apply this Lakshana Shakti on it. And he's talking about how, because there's some words in there about white and when you see, you become very ecstatic and everything like that. And he's, he comes and everything like that. So basically means when he comes riding on his carrier, you know, which just means the mouse, then everybody becomes very happy to see him because he creates all auspiciousness. That's like the original verse. But then by breaking the words and by using different meanings of the words, then he points out that, yes, you know, when the dhobi, you know, you've sent your clothes to the dhobi, right? And they've dirty and all that. But now after washing, they become white, right? And then when they come back on the back of the carrier, the donkey, then you become very happy to see that. You know, so then all the Brahmins laugh and all that. And then each one goes around and gives a different interpretation like that. And they're all just laughing. Then the final one that came around, then he mentioned and says, you know, because the Brahmins and all that, and so much talking, you get hungry. So he was saying is, yes, you know, then when you see the daiwada, you know, because they put yogurt on the top and all that. And when you see that coming, then you become very ecstatic and everything like that. So they all considered that that was the best interpretation and all. So that's what goes on in speculation, just that the Mayavadis take themselves very seriously. And they think that these speculations they come up with are very important. But as Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami points out, it's bad logic. It's just misapplied. So it's bad. You know, just let us say you have someone who's a very excellent driver. You know, but let's see how he's driving. He's irresponsible how he's driving through the traffic, going too fast, weaving in and out, making people stop, and you know, all these things. You'll say he's a bad driver. Technically, he's the best on the road. But his application of it, it's improper, therefore bad. Does that make sense? So it's very important to note. Otherwise, it's always a thing. No, but we have to use our logic. We can't just blindly accept, even though they blindly accept their bogus logic. But whatever, these things are there. But the point is the acharyas give this. We've seen what the acharyas say. We like that. And it's only through devotion you can understand anyway. So there is no question of through logic you'll understand the Lord. You can logically present the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, but it's not through logic anybody understands. It's that, you know, that sincerity, then Krishna reveals.
Right? Maharaj?
Yes.
Just reminded me what you explained. I've seen similar thing with the musicians. They will take them and then they will twist it around. They will play it in different styles. And this is their fun. But it's interesting because it's artistic thing. It's artistic approach towards Shastra, towards the logic. So it's interesting that the Mayavadis, they use this. They are too much artistic.
Yes.
It's not necessary.
Yes. No, it's not. But it gives a taste. You know, it's just something you can do with. You know, it's just like that. So it's just the living entity does that because he's trying to enjoy, you know. That's all. So therefore, the artists, they'll play with it to get a taste out of it for them. The logicians play with it in their way. You know, so everybody plays around trying to get some squeeze, some taste out of it. Yeah, but like that. Yeah, it's a very standard thing.
But as you said, you shouldn't take it too seriously because otherwise it's...
No, if it's just some fun, then you can't take it that this is, yeah. I came across this thing where this guy is playing a standard tune that is, you know, regularly known, and he plays it in the normal key. And then, you know, because he's an expert in music, he moves it up half a key. You know, he starts in C, he goes to C sharp, and you know the spaces between the notes are different. So he plays it again. Now it sounds a little different. Then he moves it up to D, then D sharp, then E, then E, like this. He just keeps going till he's done all 12. Like that, and each one comes out a little different, and this and that, and so for them that's fun, right? I sent it to my mother, and then her comment she sent back was one word. She just said weird. Yeah, so that's the way it is, you know. But yeah, they just love to play, but they take themselves seriously because they're God, right? Because if you're God, what you speculate must be important, right? So yeah. And not only bad logic, the reservoir of bad logic. I mean, that's like very poetically telling that he's like the most terrible guy, right? But he turned them from that reservoir of all bad, not even bad, all bad logic. The reservoir of all bad logic. It means whatever is bad in logic and how it can be misapplied, he's the reservoir of that. Not just he does it. He's the reservoir from which all other scholars learn to become bogus. Then he turned him into a great devotee. So that's really special. All glories to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. All glories to Lord Nityananda Prabhu. All glories to Advaita Acharya. And all glories to all the devotees of Lord Chaitanya. In ecstasy, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went from Ataranala to the temple of Jagannath. After seeing Lord Jagannath, he became very restless due to love of Godhead. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went swiftly to embrace Lord Jagannath. But when he entered the temple, he was so overwhelmed with love of Godhead that he fainted to the floor. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu fell down, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya happened to see him. When the watchman threatened to beat the Lord, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya immediately forbade him. Right, because, you know, he's falling on the floor, you know, people are coming, get up, get move out of the way, you know, take your ecstasies somewhere else, right? You know. So then, but Sarvabhauma forbade him because he saw the lakshanas on his body and this and that. He's a sannyasi, so he said, no, we have to deal with them differently. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was very surprised to see the personal beauty of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as well as the transcendental transformations wrought on his body due to love of God, right? Because he's a scholar. He knows all the shastras. And so he'll also know the Natya Shastra and all these things that have, what are all the transformations that can take place and all that. And so the ones that are can only come from something, you know, very elevated emotions. And then he's a sannyasi, he's young, so it intrigues him. He's a sannyasi, but he's so beautiful. He's so young, but he has all these transformations, right? Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu remained unconscious for a long time. Meanwhile, the time for offering prasadam to Lord Jagannath came, and the Bhattacharya tried to think of a remedy. While Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was unconscious, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, with the help of the watchmen and some disciples, carried him to his home, and he laid him down in a very sanctified room. Srila Prabhupada. At that time, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya lived on the southern side of the Jagannath temple. His home was practically on the beach and was known as Markandeya Sarasthata. At present, it is used as the monastery of Gangamata. 2:6-9-12. Examining the body of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sarvabhauma saw that his abdomen was not moving and that he was not breathing. Seeing his condition, the Bhattacharya became very anxious. The Bhattacharya then took a fine cotton swab and put it before the Lord's nostrils. So fine cotton, really, really, you know how you, the super fine fluffed and all that. So it's not just a heavy cotton, like it comes out in, you know, how you pick it, but it's been refined in that. So super fine, he took the really, really fine, like that. Sitting beside Sri Chaitanya and put it before the Lord's nostrils, he saw the cotton move very slightly. He became hopeful. Sitting behind Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he thought, this is a transcendental ecstatic transformation brought about by love of Krishna. Upon seeing the side of Sudipta Satvika, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya could immediately understand the transcendental ecstatic transformation in the body of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Such a sign takes place only in the bodies of eternally liberated devotees. Right, so he's read all the scriptures, but it's not necessarily that he fully believes these things, but he knows what they are. And so then now when these things come up and he sees them, then, you know, of course, they're going to catch his attention. Srila Prabhupada. Yes.
Also, like, you know, for them, on that platform, they look it from the platform of Ratyavas. The Satvika Bhavas.
Yes, yes. Yes,
he looks from Ratyavas, and somebody on more materialistic from Sattvavas, rather than looking from the original transcendental level.
Yes, yes, true, true. Yeah, but they'll see the transformations are the same, but the one, it'll be the mundane affection, you know, like that. Then he will take it that he has that, but he'll take it that he's attained to like a liberated platform or something. He won't understand. They don't, okay, very nice, yes. The word Sudipta Satvika is explained as follows by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Quote, the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu mentions 8 kinds of transcendental transformations in the bodies of advanced devotees. These are sometimes checked by the devotee, and there are 2 stages of such checking, technically known as Dumayita and Jwalita. The Dumayita smoking stage is exhibited only when 1 or 2 transformations are slightly present, and it is possible to conceal them, right? So it means that they come up and you can stop it. When more than 2 or 3 transcendental transformations are manifest, and it is still possible to conceal them, although with great difficulty, that stage is called Jwalita, lighted. When 4 or 5 symptoms are exhibited, the Dipta, blazing stage, has been reached. When 5, 6, or all 8 symptoms are simultaneously manifest, that position is called Udipta, inflamed. And when all 8 symptoms are multiplied 1,000 times and are all visible at once, the devotee is in the Sudipta, intensely inflamed state. Nitya Siddha Bhakta indicates the eternally liberated associates of the Lord. Such as devotees enjoy the company of the Lord in 4 relationships, as servant, friend, parent, or conjugal lover. Right, so then these things, that's what he's saying, is that eternally liberated, because otherwise, how do you have those symptoms? Because it's explained by the acharyas that the symptoms in the body, that, you know, we may get a touch of something, you know, it's like what we're saying, this domia, smoking, you might have a little bit of something in my feet, but to have, and you're dealing with one here, or one there, but when you're dealing with many of them at once, like that, that can't be handled by the material body. The material body doesn't have the strength to deal with all these opposing symptoms at one time. Only the transcendental or spiritual body can deal with that. So that's why he's saying these can only manifest in the bodies of the eternally liberated devotees, because they're dealing in a Satchitananda body. So, you know, so he's amazed, how is this manifesting in this young sannyasi? Because he doesn't know who it is. 2.6.1.13. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya considered, the uncommon ecstatic symptoms of an Adhiruddha Bhava are appearing in the body of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This is very wonderful. How are they possible in the body of a human being? Right? Because that's the point. They can't, you can't. That's why someone has to, up to just before prema, you can deal with in this body. But then beyond that, then it's not. You can't. That's why then Vastu Siddhi is there. Then from that platform, then prema can be experienced. One might have a doubt. Well, what about when these associates come here, like Srila Prabhupada and them, and that, and do they not experience these things? But they have the spiritual form, so it's experienced over there. You know, something will come across here. But yeah, so we don't have to worry about that. Srila Prabhupada, Adhiruddha Bhava or Adhiruddha Mahabhava is explained in Ujjwala Nilamani of Srila Rupa Goswami. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur quotes Rupa Goswami as follows. Quote, the loving propensity of the Ashraya devotee towards the Vishaya, Lord, becomes so ecstatic that even after enjoying the company of the Lord, company of the beloved, the devotee feels that his enjoyment is insufficient. At such time, the lover sees the beloved in different ways. Such a development of ecstasy is called anuraga. When anuraga reaches its highest limit and becomes perceivable in the body, is called bhava. When the bodily symptoms are not very distinct, however, the emotional state is still called anuraga, not bhava. When bhava ecstasy is intensified, it is called mahabhava. The symptoms of mahabhava are visible only in the bodies of eternal associates like the gopis. Right? So this Mahabhava, you only see with the gopis. And the first stage of Mahabhava can also be the confidential cowherd boys. They can also experience that in relationship to how Krishna is, things are going nicely between him and the gopis and all that. Because they're so close with Krishna, they can tune into that. They have that element of service there, so they're able to appreciate. But it's only in connection with the conjugal rasa, and that only in connection with parakiya rasa. Because in Dwarka, then the queens can only get up to, I think it's Anubhava. They can't get up into this Mahabhava. They doesn't go that high. So the intensity is so much greater. So he's seeing this, and then here, I'm not sure if it'll be explained here, but this Adiruddha Bhava, then that is only in Radharani's group there, or if that is the one that she tastes. So it's even farther than that. You wanted to say something, Halidhar? No? Okay. So not only is it a Mahabhava, but it's the one distinct in connection with Radharani. So then his whole point is, you know, only those eternal associates, that only these particular devotees. 2:6:18. While the Bhattacharya was thinking in this way at his home, all the devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, headed by Nityananda Prabhu, approached the Simhadwara, the entrance door of the temple. There, the devotees heard the people talking about a mendicant who had come to Jagannath Puri and seen the deity of Jagannath. The people said that the sannyasi had fallen unconscious upon seeing the deity of Lord Jagannath. Because his consciousness did not return, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya had taken him to his home. Hearing this, the devotees could understand that they were speaking of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Just then, Sri Gopinathacharya arrived. Gopinathacharya was a resident of Nadia, the son-in-law of Visharada, and a devotee of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He knew the true identity of his lordship, Srila Prabhupada. Maheshwara Visharada was a classmate of Nilambar Chakrabarti's. He lived in the Nadia district in a village called Vidyanagar and had two sons named Madhusudana Vachaspati and Vasudev Sarvabhauma. His son-in-law was Gopinathacharya. So Vasudev Sarvabhauma became Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. 2:6:9-43. Gopinathacharya had previously been acquainted with Mukunda Dutta, and when the Acharya saw him at Jagannath Puri, he was very much astonished. Mukunda Dutta offered obeisances unto Gopinathacharya upon meeting him. Then the Acharya embraced Mukunda Dutta and inquired about news of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Mukunda Dutta replied, "The Lord has already arrived here. We have come with him." As soon as Gopinathacharya saw Nityananda Prabhu, he offered his obeisances unto him. In this way, meeting all the devotees, he asked about news of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu again and again. Mukunda Dutta continued, "After accepting the sannyas order, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has come to Jagannath Puri and has brought all of us with him. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left our company and walked ahead to see Lord Jagannath. We have just arrived and we are now looking for him. From the talk of the people in general, we have guessed that the Lord is now at the house of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Upon seeing Lord Jagannath, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu became ecstatic and fell unconscious, and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya has taken him to his house in this condition. Just as I was thinking of meeting you, by chance we have actually met. First, let us all go to the house of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Later, we shall come to see Lord Jagannath." Hearing this and feeling very pleased, Gopinathacharya immediately took all the devotees with him and approached the house of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Right, because they won't know where it is, but Gopinathacharya will. Arriving at the home of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, everyone saw the Lord lying unconscious. Seeing him in this condition, Gopinathacharya became very unhappy, but at the same time he was happy just to see the Lord. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya permitted all the devotees to enter his house. And upon seeing Nityananda Prabhu, the Bhattacharya offered him obeisances. Sarvabhauma met with all the devotees and offered them a proper welcome. They were all pleased to see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The Bhattacharya then sent them all back to see Lord Jagannath, and he asked his own son, Chandaneshwar, to accompany them as a guide. Everyone was then very pleased to see the deity of Lord Jagannath. Lord Nityananda in particular was overwhelmed with ecstasy. When Lord Nityananda Prabhu nearly fainted, all the devotees caught him and steadied him. At that time, the priest of Lord Jagannath brought a garland that had been offered to the deity and offered it to Nityananda Prabhu. Everyone was pleased to receive this garland worn by Lord Jagannath. Afterwards, they all returned to the place where Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was staying. All of the devotees then began to loudly chant the Hare Krishna mantra. Just before noon, the Lord regained his consciousness. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu got up and very loudly chanted, Hari, Hari. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was very pleased to see the Lord regain consciousness. And he took the dust of the Lord's lotus feet. The Bhattacharya informed all of them, please take your midday baths immediately. Today I shall offer you Mahaprasadam, the remnants of food offered to Lord Jagannath. After bathing at the sea, because remember he's right down on that southern side of the temple, so they're very close to the ocean. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his devotees returned very soon. The Lord then washed his feet and sat down on the carpet to take lunch. That means he sat on the carpet, not that you put the prasad on the carpet, right? Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya made arrangements to bring various kinds of Mahaprasad from the Jagannath temple. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then accepted lunch with great happiness. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was offered special rice and first-class vegetables on golden plates. He thus took lunch in the company of his devotees. While Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya personally distributed the prasadam, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu requested him, please give me only boiled vegetables, right? Because, you know, as a sannyasi, only boiled vegetables. Srila Prabhupada, Lafra Vyanjana is a preparation in which many vegetables are boiled together. And then a chanka is added. I guess that means a chance, yeah, chanka. Maybe that's what it is, chanka. And then from that, we just got chance. Huh? Is added, consisting of spices like cumin, black pepper, and mustard seeds. Right, so then you get that mixed vegetable, that lafra. So that's what you say, please give me only the lafra, you know, because that's the simple subject, it's considered one of the simpler subjects. 2:6:44-48. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued, you can offer the cakes and preparations made with condensed milk to all the devotees. Hearing this, the Bhattacharya folded his hands and spoke as follows. Today, all of you, please try to taste the lunch just as Lord Jagannath accepted it. Meaning, taste all the preparations. After saying this, he made them all eat the various cakes and condensed milk preparations. After feeding them, he offered them water to wash their hands, feet, and mouths. Begging permission from Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his devotees, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya then went with Gopinath Acharya to take lunch. After, because he went with Gopinath, because Gopinath is family. So family's not guests. So if you have actual guests, then family helps take care of the guests. Even if it's relatives coming to visit you, they still help you take care of your guests. And then the family itself, they sit together and eat after they've taken care of the guests and the guests are, you know, situated wherever they're going to stay and rest. Then the family sits together and eats. After finishing the lunch, he returned to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Offering his obeisances to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said, Namo Narayana, I offer my obeisances to Narayana. In return, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Krishne Matir Astu, let your attention be on Krishna. Oh, that's where this comes from. Because you know, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would always say, Krishne Matir Astu. So Lord Chaitanya mentioned that. Srila Prabhupada, it is the etiquette among sannyasis, those on the fourth platform of spiritual life, to offer respects by saying, Om Namo Narayanaya. I offer my respectful obeisances unto Narayana. This greeting is used especially by Mayavadi sannyasis. According to the Smriti scriptures, a sannyasi should not expect anything from anyone, nor should he consider himself identical with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vaishnava sannyasis never think of themselves as being one with the Lord. They always consider themselves eternal servants of Krishna, and they want to see everyone in the world become Krishna conscious. For this reason, a Vaishnava sannyasi always offers his blessings to everyone, saying, Krishne Matir Astu, may you become Krishna conscious. Right, so it says here, it seems to be the Om Namo Narayanaya, you're offering your respects to Narayana. So they don't want, they're not looking for respect for themselves. So then they may say, Om Namo Narayanaya. It means I offer respects to Narayan, right? But unfortunately, the Mayavadi sannyasis think I'm Narayan, so he's offering respects to me, and I offer respects to him as Narayan. And this way, you know, they pat each other on the back, you know, like that. But the blessing then, he's saying, the Vaishnava is Krishna Matir Astu. May you become Krishna conscious. Verses 49:117. The Bhattacharya's plan to make Lord Chaitanya a first-class sannyasi. Or interesting from before, he sat on a rug and took prasad. You know, in Puri nowadays, they don't let you sit on anything and this and that. Or you can't sit higher than that. Lord Chaitanya's sitting on a rug. Maybe he's the only one sitting on a rug. But. Two, 6:49 to 56. Hearing these words, Sarvabhauma understood Lord Chaitanya to be a Vaishnav sannyasi, right? Because otherwise he would have said something else. Sarvabhauma then said to Gopinathacharya, I want to know Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's previous situation. Gopinathacharya replied, there was a man named Jagannath who was a resident of Navadvipa and whose surname was Misra, Purandara. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the son of that Jagannath Misra. And his former name was Vishwambara Misra. He also happens to be the grandson of Nilambar Chakravarti. The Bhattacharya said, Nilambar Chakravarti was a classmate of my father, Maheshwara Visharada. I knew him as such. Jagannath Misra Purandara was respected by my father. Thus, because of their relationship with my father, I respect both Jagannath Misra and Nilambar Chakravarti. Hearing that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu belonged to the Nadia district, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya became very pleased and addressed the Lord as follows. Quote, you are naturally respectable. Besides, you are sannyasi. Thus, I wish to become your personal servant. Srila Prabhupada. A sannyasi is always to be worshipped and offered all kinds of respect by the grihasthas, householders. Although Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was older than Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sarvabhauma respected him as a sannyasi and as one who has attained the topmost platform of spiritual ecstasy. Thus, the Bhattacharya certainly accepted him as his master. 2:6:57-58. As soon as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu heard this from the Bhattacharya, he immediately remembered Lord Vishnu and began to speak humbly to him as follows. Quote, because you are a teacher of Vedanta philosophy, you are the master of all the people in the world and their well-wisher as well. You are also the benefactor of all kinds of sannyasis, right? Because he's been, one is by teaching them the Vedanta's philosophy, and two is a grihastha, he takes care and gives charity and things like that, makes arrangements. Srila Prabhupada. Because the Mayavadi sannyasis teach Vedanta philosophy to the students or disciples, they are customarily called Jagat Guru. This indicates that they are the benefactors of all people. Although Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was not a sannyasi, but a householder, he used to invite all the sannyasis to his home and offer them prasadam. Thus, he was accepted as the best well-wisher and friend of all the sannyasis. Right? So that's the whole point in the Vedic system, the Varnashram system, that the Grihastha ashram is the one that is actually the central ashram, because they're the one that holds the whole thing together. They're the ones that you know, take care of everyone. So the brahmacharis, vanaprastha sannyasis, and the brahmins are giving charity to. They're the ones that, you know, the structure is made there. Then by them being married and all that, then they also then take up, how you say, the activities of, you know, it means they have the children, they themselves move on to these other ashrams. So you can say everything's coming out of that position. So in that way, you can say is that they're the well-wisher, the maintainer and benefactor of everyone. 2:6:59-69. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued, I am a young sannyasi and I actually have no knowledge of what is good and what is bad. Therefore, I am taking shelter of you and accepting you as my spiritual master. I have come here only to associate with you, and I am now taking shelter of you, right? Because he was supposed to be his teacher in Navadvipa, but he disappeared to Puri. So now Lord Chaitanya, in coming to Puri, then one of his works was to save Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Will you kindly maintain me in all respects? The incident that happened today was a great obstacle for me, but you have kindly relieved me of it. The Bhattacharya replied, do not go alone to see the deity at the Jagannath temple. It is better that you go with me or my men, right? Because otherwise he goes alone and he falls in, go in ecstasy again, then the guards that are there may give him trouble. The Lord said, I shall never enter the temple, but shall always view the Lord from the side of the Garuda Stambha. Like as before, I think he went up, must have gone up close. So from the Garuda Stambha, then he'll be farther back. I think from the Garuda Stambha, where Lord Chaitanya would stand, you can only see half of Jagannath. Like that. Somehow or another, the way Garuda is there, then the opening for them, it closed, so you can only see half of Jagannath. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya then told Gopinath Acharya, take Goswamiji and show him Lord Jagannath. Also, the apartment belonging to my maternal aunt is in a very solitary place. Make all arrangements for him to stay there. Thus, Gopinath Acharya took Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to his residential quarters and showed him where to find water, tubs, and water pots. Indeed, he arranged everything. Right? Because water is very important because the cleanliness and that. So cleanliness is one of the main duties of a sannyasi. So taking bath, washing yourself, everything like this. So where's the water? Where is everything? And that makes it a place actually proper for staying. You know, we may look at it, you know, if it has other facilities, but actually from the Vedic, it's the water. If that's good, then everything else. Once we went to Bangalore, and you know, at that time there was no temple or anything. And so then Panchavita Maharaj then arranged, he had a contact of one, you know, big businessman, and he had a bungalow, or not a bungalow, a big apartment that, you know, very big, that that we could stay in. But somehow or another, the water wasn't connected. Something, you know, had been turned off, because no one was staying there, it had been turned off. So then, you know, that was, but I think no one checked that first. Like you see here, the first thing they do is check that. But that hadn't been checked. And so then when it came time to use the water, there's no water, right? So then, he told the story of that Srila Prabhupada had mentioned. They had also had a similar situation. They were in some big fancy place, but there was no water. So Prabhupada said, without water, then even you know, a palace is hell, like that. So, you know, first thing is, if water's there, then everything else is okay. The next day, Gopinath Acharya took Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to see the early rising of Lord Jagannath. Gopinath Acharya then took Mukunda Dutta with him and went to Sarvabhauma's house. When they arrived, Sarvabhauma addressed Mukunda Dutta as follows. The sannyasi is very meek and humble by nature, and his person is very beautiful to see. Consequently, my affection for him increases. Srila Prabhupada. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya considered Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu a very humble and meek person. Because although Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was a sannyasi, he still retained his brahmachari name. The Lord took sannyas from Keshava Bharati in the Bharati Sampradaya, in which the brahmacharis, the assistants of the sannyasis, are named Chaitanya. Even after accepting sannyas, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu retained the name Chaitanya, meaning a humble servant of a sannyasi. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya appreciated this very much, because otherwise then, you know, from Chaitanya would have gone to Bharati, because then you know, okay, he's the sannyasi, but he kept the brahmachari name. So you have the 10 names of the sannyasis, then those groups of sannyasis, they have particular names that their brahmacharis are called, like that. And so he maintained that. And so Bhattacharya appreciated that, because he you know, it was just a matter of humility. Like, he saw how he worked and how he dealt and everything. 2670-73. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya continued, from which sampradaya has he accepted the sannyas order, and what is his name? Gopinath Acharya replied, the Lord's name is Sri Krishna Chaitanya, and his sannyas preceptor is the greatly fortunate Keshava Bharati. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said, Sri Krishna is a very good name, but he belongs to the Bharati community. Therefore, he's the second class sannyasi. Right? So even within liberation, there's first class, you know, second class, third class. You know, it's all Maya, it's all illusion, but still first class, second class, you know, like that. Yeah. Gopinathacharya replied, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu does not rely on any external formality. There is no need for him to accept the sannyas order from a superior sampradaya. Yeah, so the Krishna, he said the Krishna part's good, but he just said, you know, the Chaitanya, okay, that shows the humility, but he's from a Bharati line, he should be from, you know, something higher. Srila Prabhupada, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted sannyas from the Bharati sampradaya, from that community, which it belongs to the succession of Shankaracharya. Shankaracharya introduced names for sannyas disciples, and these are 10 in number. Right, because there's 108 names for the sannyasis, but he only chose 10 out of that because they're all impersonal. You know, they're impersonalists, so he picked names for that. Out of these names, the surnames Tirtha, Ashrama, and Saraswati are considered topmost. In the monastery at Sringeri, the surname Saraswati is considered first class. Bharati, second class, and Puri, third class. A sannyasi who has very nicely understood the slogan, Tattvamasi, and who takes his bath at the confluence of the rivers Ganges, Yamuna, and Saraswati, is called a Tirtha. Right, so also it seems to depend on also what they'll be the qualities that they have, you know, how they behave, and this, and then the particular name will be given. Person who is very eager to accept sannyas, who is detached from worldly activities, who has no desire for any material facilities, and who is thus saved from repeated birth and death, is known as ashrama. When a sannyas lives in a beautiful solitary place in the forest and is freed from all material desires, he is called vana. A sannyasi who always lives in the forest and renounces all connection with the world in order to be elevated to the heavenly planets, where he can live in the Nandankana, is called aranya. One who prefers living in the mountains, engaged in the study of the Bhagavad Gita, and whose intelligence is fixed is called giri. One who prefers living in great mountains, even amongst ferocious animals, to attain the summit of philosophical speculation, understanding that the essence of this material world is useless, is called parvata. A sannyasi who has dipped into the ocean of the absolute truth and collected some valuable stones of knowledge from that ocean, who never falls from the regulative principles of sannyas, is called sagara. One who has learned the classical art of music, who engages in its culture, who has become expert and completely aloof from material attachment, is called Saraswati. Saraswati is the goddess of music and learning, and in one hand she holds a musical instrument called the veena. A sannyasi who always engaged in music for spiritual elevation is called Saraswati. One who has become completely educated and is freed from all kinds of ignorance, and who is never unhappy, even in a distressed condition, is called Bharati. Yeah, so we can see is that this is a very good position, that they're thinking, well, in their line, it's something, it's not as nice. One has become very expert in... Yes.
It's an interesting phenomena, because I read this part many times. And it appears that at the first meeting, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he wants to reinitiate Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
Yes. Is that the idea?
Oh.
That or either that or at least, I don't know what that means, because this is Mayavadi, so what they do and all that, because they generally are more aligned with the tantric systems of performing activities. So whether that means is that, or it just means renaming him, or that, I have no idea. But yeah, that's what he wants to do. But that's why he said, that's why then I think it's Gopinathacharya. Gopinathacharya replied, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu does not rely on any external formality. There's no need for him to accept the sannyas order from a superior sampradaya. So he is saying that he should accept from a higher line. Because he's just saying his position, his attitude, his beauty, everything is he's just so elevated, you know, he should be, you know, connected with the topmost line, you know. So that was his idea, you know, because even though they're absorbed in Brahman and it's all Maya, they like to be situated very, you know, how you say, social standing in Maya should be quite good. You know, that's a, you know. Okay. One who has become very expert in absolute knowledge, who is situated in the absolute truth, and who always discusses the absolute truth, is called Puri. So that's the fun part, is here, this Bharati and Puri, because we see a lot of ones here, Lord Chaitanya's Bharati, and a lot of our main acharyas, associates of Lord Chaitanya, are called Puri. Then here is one who has become completely educated, free from all kinds of ignorance, who's never unhappy, even in a distressed condition, is called Bharati. We would consider that a very good position, right? One has become very expert in absolute knowledge, who is situated in the absolute truth, who always discusses the absolute truth, is called Puri. Right, you know. So you can see is that they, you know, going off to a mountain somewhere or this, or took bath in this river or that one, and then they get all these things and those kind of things, you know, very austere. But these ones based on who has that knowledge and is freed from material contamination, are always glorifying, you know, the absolute truth, then these titles they consider second and third class. What to do?
Maharaj.
All these yes.
Yes. Also that among them, the Saraswati are the one who rely on the classical art of music. That's interesting that they consider Saraswati as the highest, because their path is so tasteless that now they have to depend on arts for getting that extra taste.
Yes,
and also like most of the famous like classical art gurus of the period from 11th century onwards are from Kashmir, like, no? And all of Shaivites. So they like stamp the classical art with their names, and then they introduce new topics which were not there from Bharata Muni, like this Abhinav Gupta, Abhinav Bharati, and so many other things they added. And then they considered that as, in one sense, I think, the philosophical study also.
But we also know it's because the goddess of knowledge, Saraswati, from us, means that you have all that knowledge and you're able to present that and, you know, speak that, understand that, present that. And so in this way, that's how we would look at the Saraswati aspect. All these sannyasis are assisted by brahmacharis, who are described as follows. One who knows his real identity and is fixed in his particular occupational duty, who is always happy in spiritual understanding, is called Swarup Brahmachari. Right, so Swarup Damodar, he was, you know, would be that name. One who completely knows the Brahman effulgence and is always engaged in the practice of yoga is called Prakasha Brahmachari. One has acquired absolute knowledge and who always meditates on the absolute truth, the unlimited and the Brahman effulgence, thus keeping himself in transcendental bliss, is called Ananda Brahmachari. One who is able to distinguish between matter and spirit, who is never disturbed by material transformations, and who meditates on the unlimited, inexhaustible, auspicious Brahman effulgence, is a first-class learned brahmachari in his name Chaitanya. So you can see here, it's of what's been mentioned here, it's the best. So these are the brahmachari names. But at the same time, is somehow or another, they consider it the lowest, even though they're jnanis. And what to do? Shankaracharya always made some tricks, you know, like that, you know, like Guru Vayur, that seems to be one of his biggest tricks, you know. They do 5 elephant processions a day, and the whole time they chant Hare Krishna, you know. They sing Gita Govinda, the deities, they do all these things like that. For no other place, you know, the Shankaras are connected like that, but there they do all those things, so it's kind of. When Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was talking with Gopinath Acharya about Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's sannyas community, he appreciated the first name, Sri Krishna, but not like the surname Chaitanya, which is the name for a brahmacharya belonging to the Bharati community. Because remember, Bharati was one who has become completely educated, free from all kinds of ignorance, is never unhappy, even in a distressed condition, is called Bharati. Right, and one who is able to distinguish between matter and spirit, who is never disturbed by material transformations, and who meditates on the unlimited, inexhaustible, auspicious Brahman effulgence, as the first class learned brahmachari, is named Chaitanya. So we see is that these ones, they have, they're completely educated, and they're able to apply that, that they're unaffected by the material nature, no matter what the situation is. So both these, the Bharati and the Chaitanya, from our perspective, would be considered very nice because they can practically apply these things. They're unaffected by the material nature, and they're always absorbed in transcendence. He therefore suggested that the Lord be elevated to the Saraswati community. However, Gopinath Acharya pointed out that the Lord does not depend on any external formality. Gopinath Acharya was firmly convinced that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna himself, and therefore independent of any external ritual or formality. If one wants to engage in pure devotional service, he does not require titular superiority as a Bharati or a Saraswati. Right, so it's not what required. It's a matter of like sometimes Prabhupada, someone come to Prabhupada, I want to take sannyas, and he'd ask Prabhupada to be there with the other, you know, devotees, and that so many sannyasis, and that he'd ask why. He says, well, no, because you know when you preach and all that, then you know sometimes people don't listen and that, but if you're a sannyasi, then they'll respect, and then they'll listen and that, you know. So it sounds very logical and very, you know, proper and all that. But then the fun part is then Prabhupada would turn to the sannyasis there and laugh and says, oh, he wants to take sannyas for to be respected like that. And so then, you say, Prabhupada wasn't impressed with that. Can you still hear me? Yeah? Okay. 2:6, 47 to 75. The Bhattacharya inquired, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is in his full-fledged youthful life, right? Because youth is 16 to 29, inclusive, right? It's when you turn 30, you're over the hill. So yeah, in the West, they got that one right, yeah. So here, he took sannyas at 24, right? So that he's full-fledged, because that's also then one of the times recommended that, you know, you get married at that time. Because then the body is fully developed and everything. So he's saying that full-fledged, right? How can he keep the principles of sannyas? I shall continually recite Vedanta philosophy before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, so that he may remain fixed in his renunciation and thus enter upon the path of monism. Right. So he's thinking he'll have difficulty, but if he's always listening to the Vedanta philosophy, he'll be fixed in, you know, giving up the material world and all that, then he'll be able to stay nicely as a sannyasi. So all, you know, he wants to do that as a service. Srila Prabhupada. According to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, among sannyasis, the cultivation of Vedanta philosophy helps in becoming detached from sense gratification. Thus, a sannyasi can protect the prestige of wearing a loincloth, kopana. One has to practice sense control as well as mind control and subdue the six portions of speech, mind, anger, tongue, belly, and genitals. Then one can become expert in understanding the devotional service of the Lord and thus become a perfect sannyasi. For that purpose, one must cultivate knowledge and renunciation regularly. Then when one is attached to material sense gratification, he cannot protect his sannyas order. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya suggested by the study of vairagya, renunciation, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu might be saved from the clutches of full-fledged youthful desires. 2:6, 76. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya then suggested, if Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would like, I could bring him into a first-class sampradaya by offering him saffron cloth and performing the reformatory process again. Srila Prabhupada. The Bhattacharya wanted to reinstate Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu into the Saraswati Sampradaya, because he did not like the Lord's belonging to the Bharati Sampradaya or Puri Sampradaya. Actually, he did not know the position of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. As the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did not depend on an inferior or superior Sampradaya. The Supreme Personality of Godhead remains in the supreme position in all circumstances. 2:6, 77, 78. Gopinathacharya and Mukunda Dutta became very unhappy when they heard this, right? Because they're thinking, the Bhattacharya is thinking that, you know, it'll benefit him by being in his higher sampradaya, by hearing the Vedanta philosophy, then being fixed in monism, he'll be able to give up, you know, maintain his renunciation and everything like that. So hearing this, they became unhappy. Gopinathacharya therefore addressed Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya as follows. My dear Bhattacharya, you do not know the greatness of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. All the symptoms of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are found in him to the highest degree. Srila Prabhupada, since the Bhattacharya was an impersonalist, he had no idea of the absolute truth beyond the impersonal effulgence. However, Gopinathacharya informed him that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Those who know the absolute truth know it in three phases, as explained in Bhagavad Gita 1, Bhagavatam 1:2-11. Vedante, Vedanti, Tat Tattva Vidas, Tattvam Yajgyanam Advayam, Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavan Iti, Shabdiyate. Those who are in knowledge of the non-dual absolute truth know very clearly what is Brahman, what is Paramatma, and what is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is Sad Aishwarya Purna, complete in six opulences. Gopinathacharya emphasized that all those six opulences were completely existing in Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Right, so there's no need of anything else. He doesn't have to gain something from another source. 2679-80. Gopinathacharya continued, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is celebrated as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Those who are ignorant of this connection find the conclusion of knowledgeable men very difficult to understand. End quote. The disciples of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya retaliated, right? Because he's his brother-in-law, and he's, you know, must be all the time saying these different things. So he says, those who are ignorant in this connection, means that he's the Supreme Lord, find the conclusion of knowledgeable men very difficult to understand. So that means those who are knowledgeable understand this, but those who are ignorant can't understand this. So basically, he's calling him a fool. Nicely, very pleasantly. The disciples of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya retaliated. By what evidence do you conclude that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Lord? Right? At least they're asking evidence and working in a proper way of discussion rather than just saying, you know, this is nonsense and all that. Gopinathacharya replied, the statements of authorized acharyas who understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead are proof. Srila Prabhupada. Since the appearance of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there have been many pseudo-incarnations in India who do not present authorized evidence. 500 years ago, the disciples of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, being very learned scholars, were certainly right in asking Gopinathacharya for evidence. If a person proposes that he himself is God or that someone else is an incarnation of God or God himself, he must cite evidence from Shastra to prove his claim. Thus, the request of the Bhattacharya's disciples is quite bona fide. Unfortunately, at the present moment, it's become fashionable to present someone as an incarnation of God without referring to the Shastras. Before an intelligent person accepts someone as an incarnation of God, however, he must ask about the evidence. When the disciples of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya challenged Gopinathacharya, he immediately replied correctly, we must hear the statements of great personalities in order to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Lord Krishna is established as the Supreme Personality of Godhead in statements by statements from many authorized persons, such as Brahma, Narada, Vyasa, Asita, and Arjuna. Similarly, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is also established as the Supreme Personality of Godhead by evidence from the same personalities. This will be explained later. 2681. Somehow or another, Jagadish Prabhu keeps getting lower and lower down on the screen. No, it's okay. It's just, I know sometimes I start sliding down also.
Oh, I see.
Okay. Oh, okay, okay.
Sorry, one AC, one room.
I see. Very good, very good. Yes. 2681. The disciples of the Bhattacharya said, we derive knowledge of the absolute by logical hypothesis. Anumane means they hypothesize on the verses rather than, like we said, they don't take the direct meaning. So they apply, means the direct meaning, then you would simply hypothesize how to practically apply it. You wouldn't be hypothesizing on its meaning, because the direct meaning's there. But they take the verse and then take the words and then find different ways to put them together and break them and everything, so that they can come up with their own conclusion and all that. Gopinathacharya replied, "One cannot attain real knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead by such logical hypothesis and argument." Srila Prabhupada. The Mayavadi philosophers in particular make certain hypotheses about the absolute truth. They reason that in the material world, we experience that everything is created. If we trace the history of anything, we find a creator. Therefore, there must be a creator of this huge cause of manifestation. By such reasoning, they come to the conclusion that a higher power has created this cause of manifestation. The Mayavadis do not accept this greater power to be a person, right? So they all take it up to this greater something, but then that's where they stop. So some get to the material energy, some go beyond that, but they, you know, it's like this. Their brains cannot accommodate the fact that the huge cosmic manifestation can be created by a person. They doubt this because as soon as they think of a person, they think of a person within the material world with limited potency. Sometimes the Mayavadi philosophers will accept Lord Krishna and Lord Rama as Bhagavan, but they think of the Lord as a person having a material body, right? They'll think he's the best of all people. They'll think them in, you know, the Sattvaguna, they'll think that they're the topmost, you know, that they can be the Purushottama, and that's all right. But they just think that they have a material body like they do. So therefore, if they have that transcendental understanding, a humber masmi, then they also become Purushottama. So yeah, it's a bit weird. Mayavadis do not understand that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, has a spiritual body. They think of Krishna as a great personality, a human being, within whom there is the supreme impersonal power, Brahman. So they just think the greatest power of Brahman is manifesting through him. So Brahman is the origin. But the point is that impersonal, just going for it, it comes from someplace. Otherwise, how is it just sitting there, you know? Brahman, okay, the personal. Therefore, they finally conclude that the impersonal Brahman is the supreme, not the personality of Krishna. This is the basis of Mayavad philosophy. However, from the Shastras, we can understand that the Brahman effulgent consists of the bodily rays of Krishna. Right? That makes more sense, because we always see that the light and all that comes from something. There's an original source, like the light from the sun or from the light or from the candle, like that. So it's always going to be coming from somewhere. So that's the natural form. But because they've rejected whatever here is one way, they think it must be the opposite. So then they take it, here form gives rise to the light. So there it must be the light gives rise to the form. That's their idea. You know, it's easy. We take it that they're greatly intellectual. You just reverse it. Whatever it says, just reverse it. You know, and that's it. You know, anybody can do that, you know. That's Shankaracharya's trick, is they use such a technical, and they become so highly scholarly and everything and skilled and all. But the process they use is just any child could use it, you know, like that. Mayavadi philosophers study the Vedic literature, but they do not understand that in the last stage of realization, the absolute truth is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. They do not accept the fact that there's a creator of this cosmic manifestation. But they do accept the fact that there's a creator of this cosmic manifestation, but that is Anuman hypothesis. The Mayavadi philosopher's logic is something like seeing smoke on the hill and concluding that there's a fire. When there's a forest fire on a high hill, smoke is first of all visible. Since it is known that smoke is created when there is fire from seeing the smoke on the hill, one can conclude that a fire is burning there. Similarly, from seeing this cause of manifestation, the Mayavadi philosophers conclude that there must be a creator. Right? So they've come to that idea, but unfortunately, their conclusion in this about the creator, they misunderstand, and so they can't properly appreciate the personal aspect. So they will say there's a supreme, everything's coming from Brahman, but they don't actually understand it, that Brahman is a person. The disciples of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya wanted evidence to show that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was actually the creator of the causal manifestation, right? Because he said he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Only then would they accept him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the original cause of creation. Gopinathacharya replied that one could not understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead by guesswork. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 7:25, Naham prakasha sarvasya yoga maya samavritaha. Mudho yam nabijanati loko yam ajam avyayam. I am never manifest to the foolish and unintelligent. For them, I am covered by my eternal creative potency, yoga maya. And so the deluded world knows me not. Right? His eternal creative potency, yoga maya. But for them, the effect is mahamaya. Right? So the deluded world knows me not, who am unborn and infallible. The Supreme Personality of Godhead reserves the right of not being exposed to non-devotees. He can only be understood by bona fide devotees. 2.6.82. Gopinathacharya continued, one can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead only by his mercy, not by guesswork or hypothesis. Srila Prabhupada. One cannot understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead simply by exhibiting some mundane logic. Foolish persons are enchanted by magical demonstrations. And when they see a few wonderful things done by mystical power, they accept a magician as the Personality of Godhead or an incarnation. I don't know if that's still recently these things are going on, but like when we came in the 70s, it was very, very... I remember being in the house in Madras, and we had been invited to lunch somebody's house. So we went there, you know, so there were the Panchadevita, Koyananda, myself. I'm not sure if there were any other brahmacharis with us. And then there were some other local sadhus who were there, you know, these North Indian kind of sadhus. And that. Used originally from South, but... they generally go north because in South, unless you're part of a sampradaya, they don't really accept you. You know, in North, if you're just one of the babas, it's all right. They're cool with that. So you see a lot of the people from South, they want to be, you know, just a sadhu like that. They just go to North and take part in the things there. So he was talking about how met this one yogi, you know, like that. And he manifests this, you know, perfectly fresh, crisp, you know, 1,000 rupee note, right? This is before Indira Gandhi, you know, when she made them illegal like that. So when they were still legal tender. So he was so impressed and trying to impress us with, you know, this person's God, you know, like that. Because otherwise, who else could do that, right? You know, yeah. So that's the whole thing, these mystic powers and that. And they do this stuff, you know. This is not the way of realization, nor should one guess or speculate about an incarnation of God or the Personality of Godhead. One has to learn from a bona fide person or from the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself, as Arjuna did, by the mercy of Krishna. Right? So by mercy of Krishna, you'll hear he himself will speak through the devotees, or he will put you in contact with those devotees, so then we'll tell you about Krishna. Krishna himself also gives many hints about his potencies as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One should understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead only through the evidence presented by the Shastras and the Mahajanas. In any case, one must have the mercy of the Lord in order to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead by devotional service. 2.6.83.84. Yes.
Maharaj? I think in this case, it's Jiva Goswami brings out in Bhagavad Sandarbha that because the Mayavadis, they believe that Jiva is manifest when the Brahman is, you know, it's like not through the avidya, through the ignorance.
Covered
Brahman
by
is
the avidya, shakti.
Yeah, Brahman is covered by ignorance, then Jiva manifests. But then they say Brahman covered by Maya, Ishwara or Supreme Personality of God had manifested. Like, no. For them, Lord means Ishwara. The person is Ishwara who is Brahman covered by Avidya. Rather than understanding that Avidya is covering you to not understand the potency of. That's why we call them Maya.
Yes, very nice. Very nice. Yeah. Well, because they say it's all Maya, it's all illusion. So there's nothing. So then basically they're just covered Buddhists. Like that. You know that, yeah. And then it's a mess. It's a real mess. So then, we finished that. What Srila Prabhupada said, right?
Maharaj, 2683.
Yeah. Okay. The Acharya continued. If one receives but a tiny bit of the Lord's favor by dint of devotional service, he can understand the nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. My Lord, if one is favored by even a small, slight trace of the mercy of your lotus feet, he can understand the greatness of your personality. But those who speculate in order to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead are unable to know you, even though they continue to study the Vedas for many years. Srila Prabhupada. The above verses from Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.29. Brahma Samhita 5.33 states, Vedeshu durlabham adurlabham atma bhaktau. Although the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, is the ultimate goal of knowledge, Vedaish cha sever aham eva vedyaha. Bhagavad Gita 15.15. One who is not a pure devotee and who is not engaged in the service of the Lord cannot understand him. Lord Brahma therefore confirms this. Vedeshu durlabham. It is very difficult to understand the Supreme simply through one's studies. Adurlabham atma bhaktau. However, it is very easy for the devotees to capture the Lord. The Lord is known as Ajita, unconquerable. No one can conquer the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but the Lord consents to be conquered by his devotees. That is his nature, as stated in the Padma Purana. So, quoted in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhyalila 17.136, Atha Sri Krishna Namadi na bhaved grahayam indriyahi sevan mukhe hi jihwa dao swayam eva spurat yada. Being pleased by devotional activities, the Lord reveals himself to his devotees. That is the way to understand him. The verse from Srimad Bhagavatam quoted by Gopinath Acharya was originally spoken by Lord Brahma when he was defeated by Lord Krishna, right? So you have to accept him as an authority, right? Lord Brahma had stolen all the calves and coward boys in order to test Krishna's power. Lord Brahma admitted that his own extraordinary powers within this universe were not in the least comparable to the unlimited powers of Lord Krishna. If Lord Brahma can make a mistake in understanding Krishna, what to speak of ordinary persons who either misunderstand Krishna or falsely present a so-called incarnation of Krishna for their own sense gratification. So it's interesting to note is that in his approach to establishing the Lord's position, because they said, we want evidence, you know, to prove that he's the Supreme Lord. But he's starting off with the evidence that you can't know him by logic. He can only be the Lord can reveal himself and, you know, through the mercy of the Lord, through the mercy of the devotees. So performing something in a devotional way that pleases the Lord, that's where then you can understand. So one might say, well, where's the evidence? But the first point is you can't understand it except in this way. So even you demand evidence, even if it's given, you'll never understand it. So the point is unless you approach with that mood of surrender, you won't understand. Right? And that's stated in all these scriptures. And we see in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that in all these things. So that's the first thing to do, because that's the whole point, is you don't have to discuss something with somebody on their terms, but on what are the terms that the scriptures present. So the point is their attitude, you can't, if you have a challenging mood, you have that non-devotional attitude, you don't believe in the eternal form of the Lord, you can't understand. It's just the way it is. And if you have the proper attitude, then the Lord, by his mercy, then can reveal. Yes?
Maharaj, just struck me that the meaning of to attempt to understand somebody through logic without referring to him as a person, this is a very erroneous idea, because you ignore the person and you just try to speculate about him.
You know, he doesn't exist as a person. It's just, you know, like that. You hear all these glories about him, but that's the impersonal feature. It's not him as a person, like that. It doesn't make sense. That's why it's just Mayavadis are offensive. Not that a Mayavadi might be offensive. No, just being a Mayavadi is offensive. You know, that's all. Just your existence as a Mayavadi is offensive. Okay. Yeah, very good. Okay, so we'll stop here for today and we'll continue tomorrow. Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Shri Prabhupada ki.